Hello and welcome. This is Your Call. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. Last week, we opened up the phone lines to talk to ride-hailing drivers for services such as Uber and Lyft, and also taxi drivers and passengers. And what a lively conversation it turned out to be. We heard from everyone pretty much involved in the new world in which we get to choose different ways to get around. And folks shared their experiences and their ideas about how to create safer conditions for everybody on the road and how to reduce traffic congestion. So today, we follow up on that conversation, and we're going to talk about some of the major themes that came out of that discussion. The current regulatory landscape is still wide open in many ways. How are cities trying to influence the way that car services operate, and how can constituents get their voices heard? To do that, we have three guests joining me today. Supervisor Aaron Peskin, he's serving his fourth non-consecutive term representing District 3 on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. His area includes Nob Hill, Chinatown, North Beach, and Fisherman's Wharf, known to be very congested areas, so certainly he has a dog in this hunt. He also serves as the chair of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. That's the county's congestion management agency. And he's currently co-chairing the city's Transportation Task Force 2045. They're looking into the city's transit infrastructure and the operation needs and potential revenue sources for years to come. Supervisor Peskin joins me in studio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez is also here. He's a political columnist for the San Francisco Examiner's On Guard. He's also a transportation beat reporter covering pedestrians, muni, BART, bikes, anything with wheels. And Joe's here with me in the studio as well. Hi,
good,
Joe.
Good to be here.
And on the phone is Los Angeles Times reporter Liam Dillon. Liam covers California state politics and policy for the LA Times. He's based in Sacramento. Before joining the Times last year, Dillon covered local politics in San Francisco and also in Southwest Florida, and he's on the line in Sacramento. Hi, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Just to be clear, we did invite the ride-hailing regulatory agency, the California Public Utilities Commissioner, onto the show, specifically Commissioner Leanne Randolph, who was unavailable because of the commission's regularly scheduled voting meeting at this time. So just wanted to throw that out there. Let's start, Joe, by defining our terms. We might be using a couple of alphabets. So what is a TNC?
Well, TNC is a transportation network company that would be the ride hails like Uber and Lyft, but also other kind of tech-based, app-based transportation services as defined by the California Public Utilities Commission when they first began these regulations, just a handful of years ago. And that the TNCs and the formation of those regulations, that's where we really start to see this tension happening, because it's that the starkly different regulations from taxi cabs that critics are pointing to and what needs to change in order to address some of the problems that they're seeing on the road.
I must say, when we did the show last week where we had a former Lyft Uber driver who became a cabbie and an Uber driver on the phone and passengers and cabbies and bicyclists calling in,
sure.
It was so contentious. I was shocked. Does that surprise you at all?
Oh, not at all. I write about Uber and Lyft, at least every week, and I get nothing but heated comments. Whether it's from Facebook or Twitter or even regular snail mail from bicyclists who decry the blocked bike lanes, or neighbors who decry the congested traffic, or Uber and Lyft drivers who decry what they see as a witch hunt against them while they're just trying to make a living.
Well, Liam, let's go to you. You cover statewide transportation issues. Let's go from the sort of the macro to the micro. We're going to talk a bit more, a lot more actually, about San Francisco and how they're trying to regulate these services. But in terms of how to begin regulating them, on the statewide level is certainly the way companies like Uber would like to see it done, because they claim that a statewide regulatory scheme would help them operate easier in cities with some kind of consistency. Some cities are saying that that does not allow them to adapt to the needs of their particular municipality. So what have you heard, Liam, in terms of the debate over how to begin regulating either by city or on a statewide level?
Well, I think for the most part, the decision has been made. I mean, the state decided a few years ago that it was going to be doing regulations for Uber and Lyft for the most part, and that's the prevailing wisdom. That's the decision, and it certainly in the capital, no one is suggesting that that needs to change. And so there are suggestions that perhaps the current regulator for Uber and Lyft, which is the California Public Utilities Commission, which, let's remind your audience, is also responsible for regulating the oil industry in the state, the gas industry in the state, the energy industry in the state, has too many things on its plate to also worry about, things like Uber and Lyft. And so there's been a lot of discussion in recent years about potentially moving the regulatory structure from the PUC to a different agency, perhaps the Department of Motor Vehicles or something else like that. But as far as taking the power away from the state and devolving that to locals, that is something that's sort of seen as a non-starter up here.
Supervisor Peskin, you represent District 3. That's Nob Hill, Chinatown, North Beach, Fisherman's Wharf. And according to a report this week at a County Transportation Authority meeting, which you chair, Uber and Lyft drivers apparently make up a substantial share of the drivers in the city's northeastern neighborhood. So what do the numbers tell us about the impact that the ride-hailing services are having on different neighborhoods?
Well, let me start by saying that Uber and Lyft have not been forthcoming with data that the city of San Francisco has asked for repeatedly by and through our municipal transportation agency. As a matter of fact, the state Public Utilities Commission has been complicit in withholding information that I believe is public information, but in tortured rulings they have said is confidential. We all have to understand the tremendous political power that Uber wields in Sacramento that, as Liam just said, have stopped local lawmakers like myself and my colleagues from implementing reasonable laws. But we were able to do our own data scrapes at the County Transportation Authority, and the news confirms, I think, everything that we're experiencing on the streets, particularly in the northern part of the city, in and around downtown, in the district that I represent, in the district south of Market that Supervisor Jane Kim represents, where we have as much as 26% additional congestion in those parts of the city. Over, as Joe said, 570,000 vehicle miles traveled extra per day that are being generated by Uber and Lyft, 170,000 to 220,000 trips per day, 220,000 at the peak on Friday evenings, 170,000 trips per day. And we all know the behaviors that you heard about last week, whether it's double parking in bike lanes, people who don't know their way around San Francisco, focused on their cell phones, they don't know the driving patterns, they've added to safety problems in the city. None of that currently can be regulated by myself and my colleagues.
Well, and to pull the lens out a little bit, I mean, the concern that local lawmakers and business groups and everyone is having is, how do we mitigate the congestion? No one is saying Uber and Lyft should go away. What they're saying is they want reasonable ability to kind of measure what's happening with Uber and Lyft and to have reasonable ability to control it. When Uber and Lyft talk about this, they'll say, "Well, we take cars off the road. If you put us out there, you're gonna see fewer cars in general, and that's going to help traffic." But what the study that Aaron has just referenced from the County Transportation Authority showed was actually these Uber and Lyft are operating in the already most congested parts of the city most often. Downtown, the northern portions of the city from the marina to North Beach to south of Market, places where there's already a lot of public transit options and there's already a lot of traffic are where they are the most. They're not, from a transportation standpoint, if you're like a transportation planner, you would want to see those cars kind of helping out where – you would want to see Uber and Lyft helping out where there's transit need, not where there's – it's like they're competing with our public transit.
So they are literally becoming part of the problem rather than part of the solution. But you can't really stop the, you can't stop the music now, right? How do you, as far as a policy is concerned, Aaron, look at it as an inevitability and begin to regulate it.
So as I said earlier this week, information is power, and now having this information is a tool for us to go to the state legislature and ask for some reforms, particularly as it relates to San Francisco. San Francisco is very different than, say, Marin County or suburban counties. And so San Francisco, I think, needs to be able to do the kind of regulation that historically we did in the taxi business, where people had to have training, proper levels of insurance. None of that exists in the Wild West of TNCs these days.
Liam Dillon, LA Times reporter, you cover transportation policy. Certainly, San Francisco isn't the only city that's trying to access data on companies like Uber and Lyft and their impacts on traffic and the environment. So what steps have you found that the California Public Utilities Commission, the CPUC, has taken to provide municipalities with that data?
Well, they haven't agreed to do that. You know, that's something that they are considering taking a look at. There's a big sort of scoping decision that at the PUC is trying to undergo and undertake through the end of the year that addresses the data issue, among a number of other things. One of the most hot-button issues that's been on the PUC's docket for a long time, and it has been delayed as far as a final decision, is this background check issue. You know, most taxi drivers, or in fact, I believe it's all around the state, according to local regulations, have to pass fingerprint background check requirements in order to be able to drive. That does not apply to Uber and Lyft. They have a different background check requirement that the companies themselves do that look and those were strengthened by the legislature last year, so they were tighter than they used to be. But that issue is sort of the primary one that the PUC is looking at now to make a final decision on by the end of the year.
And Liam, can you just give us a brief primer? Just what is the agency, the CPUC's, authority over the ride-hailing services?
They are the ride-hailing regulator. That was a decision made by the legislature a number of years ago when these companies sort of first came to the fore. And what happened in California with giving ride-hailing regulations to the state is something that the companies would like to see and have tried to replicate across the country. We've seen them, a big fight in Texas where Austin kicked out City of Austin and Texas made a decision that the companies did not like, so the companies left for a while. They've now returned, but there's also been an effort among the Texas legislature for there to be statewide regulations that would override anything local. And let's sort of, you know, there are some reasons for that. I think one that I think is probably most obvious and easy for your listeners to understand is this issue and what's known in the taxing industry of deadheading. I mean, there's a number of rules that say that taxi drivers cannot, for instance, pick up a rider in one city, drive them to another, and then pick up a rider in that second city and drive them back, right? I mean, it's sort of like the Bay Bridge problem, right? By having regulations on a statewide basis rather than on a local basis, you allow drivers to be able to do things that most people would think would be common sense. But there are lots of reasons why those rules were put into place when there was not competition from another industry. And so these are the sorts of things that if you have regulation on a statewide level, the companies will argue make things easier for consumers.
It should be stated that as a point of contrast, taxis for a long time have been regulated in cities.
Joe Rodriguez, go ahead.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sorry. Taxis have been regulated in cities. So, you know, in San Francisco, the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, they inspect taxi cabs. They have kind of rigorous requirements for the drivers. They even do drug tests. They have cameras installed in the cabs. They have all these kind of protections, insurance requirements, many, many hoops to jump through regulatorily. And that's kind of what Uber and Lyft are trying to avoid. They know that local transportation agencies, have more incentive to be, really to crack down on transportation locally because they see the effects. They see the congestion. They know the constituents that are, that are suffering when there's a crime in a cab, and they have a recourse to get it taken care of as opposed to a Uber or Lyft. So there's more strict and stringent requirements that they would face if they were being regulated on a local level, and that's what they're trying to avoid.
Joe, you mentioned the SFMTA, and we do have a statement from Leanne Randolph's office. The report released this week presents estimates of the volume and frequency of trips in San Francisco. It draws on GPS-based data, far greater granularity and time sensitivity than the annual data submitted to the CPUC. Commissioner Randolph, who was assigned as the lead commissioner, has reopened the question of data so that interested parties can revisit the questions that have arisen since 2013. So, Aaron Peskin?
And let me be very clear. The data that we were able to scrape leaves more questions than it gives us answers. It does not, for instance, tell us about equity. It doesn't tell us who's being discriminated against. Anecdotally, we know and have evidence that people of color have been left behind. We know that, for instance, the taxi industry is required to pick up disabled individuals. That's not happening with Uber and Lyft. We were not able to answer those questions in this data scrape, but this is something that if Uber and Lyft would actually work with local municipalities like San Francisco, that we could get answers to those questions and figure out appropriate regulation. Let me also say statewide regulation is not working.
Hmm. Yeah,
well, Joe Rodriguez, go ahead.
The wheelchair issue is especially been changing lately. It's traditionally the taxi industry has had paratransit cabs, so wheelchair equipped cabs that are larger vans that have straps for a wheelchair. Uber and Lyft say that they're disability friendly, and they do have options for you to be picked up if you're in a kind of a foldable wheelchair, but they don't, as of yet, have a fleet of vehicles that can pick you up if you have a motorized wheelchair, though there are some hints that they might be moving towards that soon. For years, as the taxi industry has declined, we've seen the number of available paratransit cabs also decline. There aren't fewer people with wheelchairs looking to get rides out there, but there are fewer cabs that can drive them. And that's in this realm of Uber and Lyft that's been happening. And Uber and Lyft haven't been there to pick up that slack and take over that part of the industry, because it's not as profitable.
When we had callers last week, that was one of the things that people mentioned. You know, why can't I bring my seeing eye dog? If I have issues with a wheelchair, why aren't they picking me up? And as Supervisor Peskin mentioned, what is the service to underserved, particularly minority communities? So I know that the city of San Francisco subpoenaed Uber. Has that shed any light based on what you found so far?
We have yet to get the documents, but time is running out for them, and I salute the city attorney for issuing those subpoenas and look forward to getting the information and Uber and Lyft's cooperation.
Joe Rodriguez, go ahead.
Well, I should say, this. You mentioned the scoping, the CPC's scoping memo in their effort to allow people to weigh in on whether or not we should have the cities should have data on Uber and Lyft. But this comes after this kind of sea tide change in the city's kind of feeling towards Uber and Lyft. For many years, these questions were still being raised by the SFMTA, the transportation agency, and others kind of who were very much in the weeds on this kind of stuff, but it wasn't really in the public's eye. These problems have persisted for quite a while, or what have been identified as problems by some. But it wasn't until there's this kind of sea tide change in city government when, Aaron and Supervisor Jane Kim and Supervisor Asha Safai, the city attorney's office, the city treasurer, and even recently the mayor have all kind of called to attention the need for some movement from Uber and Lyft to be more transparent. This has all come in the last few months. It's been really an incredible change.
Joe is absolutely right. This is Aaron Peskin. A year ago, I actually attempted to pass a resolution calling on Uber and Lyft to do more background checks, and I was not able to get that passed at the Board of Supervisors. If you watched our County Transportation Authority meeting this Tuesday, the entire attitude of all of the 11 elected members of that body has changed, and they've become much more skeptical. They're much more interested in pursuing regulation that we're able to pursue. So we've reached the political tipping point.
We want to get your calls in here. We know from last week that this is one of those issues that affects just about everyone. If you've noticed, as I have, all of the stickers in the windows that say Uber and Lyft, it seems to be growing exponentially. And whether you walk or ride or drive, this is one of those things that impacts us all. So what questions do you have about the ride-hailing companies that operate in your community? What questions do you have about how they're regulated? And what public safety concerns might you have? If you had a chance, what would you tell regulators about how to proceed and how to prioritize? Give us a call, 866-798-8255. 798-8255. You can drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also post a web comment on yourcallradio.org. Liam Dillon, there is currently a bill in the state legislature. Can you tell us about how that one's proceeding? This one is by the Campbell Assembly member, Evan Lowe.
Yes. Okay. So this one aims to deregulate some of the issues in the taxi industry in an effort to make taxis more competitive with Uber and Lyft. And this was written, the assemblyman who is the head of the tech caucus, he's written a number of legislation in the past that it aims to assist Uber and Lyft. And sort of more, before I get into the actual substance of the legislation, sort of more broadly, Evan Lowe, who is young and a Democrat, is among a number of young Democrats in the legislature who are very friendly to Uber and Lyft. And I think part of the reason why the companies have had so much success up here, yes, they have a pretty robust lobbying effort, but also I think there's natural inclination, particularly among young tech-friendly Democrats, to align with GOP members of the legislature who tend to be anti-regulation in general or want fewer regulations in general to get a lot of legislation passed. And that's sort of overwhelmed sort of traditional, I guess, labor concerns or things that are traditional sort of power bases in the Democratic Party. So that alliance, I think, between young tech-friendly Democrats and Republicans has really gone a long way to allow sort of friendly legislation for Uber and Lyft. While Evan was writing, Selman Lowe was writing some of his pro-Uber legislation, the taxi companies came to him and said, hey, we need some help too. And so he said, you're right, we should try to deregulate you folks and make it easier for you to operate. And so, for instance, he wants to deal with the issue, like I had mentioned earlier, about whether taxis can pick up in one city and drop off in another and then pick up a passenger in that second city without having to have a permit city by city. So he wants to move regulation instead of on a city basis to more of a regional basis, whether that's by county or things like that. Also, he wants to allow for taxis to be able to raise and lower their prices, similar to how Uber and Lyft do now with the surge pricing model, although there would be a cap that each county would be able to put into place. And so these are efforts that he believes will allow them to compete better with the ride hail.
Supervisor Peskin, do you have a thought about Assemblymember Lowe's proposal?
Well, I'm actually particularly concerned about a Senate bill by a gentleman from Southern California, Bradford, Senate Bill 182, which would take away our current ability to require business permits for the operators of transportation network vehicles, Uber and Lyft cars, which has been opposed by our treasurer, Jose Cisneros, and unfortunately got out of the state Senate and is on its way to the state assembly. But that fundamentally undermines this city and other cities' ability to even have the level of knowledge about who's out there on our streets.
Yeah, and at the heart of
Joe,
at the heart of the argument against the ability for San Francisco to ask for Uber and Lyft drivers to file for business licenses is the idea that these drivers may need to attain business licenses in every city in which they operate. And for a driver who operates in like Oakland and Berkeley and San Francisco, the argument is that that might be onerous. But what I think is interesting is that if you look at this kind of transportation authority data, you see that was recently released, you see so many drivers coming from all over the Bay Area and even outside the Bay Area to drive in San Francisco in particular. And anecdotally, the markets for Uber and Lyft outside of San Francisco in the greater Bay Area are not terribly good. So it may throw a bit of a wrench in that argument to know just that, most of these drivers are operating in San Francisco because it's so dense here and it's so much more profitable because you can make more trips and make more money.
And we are the magnet. And not to put too fine a point on it, but the study actually shows that less than 30% of the Uber and Lyft drivers on San Francisco streets are actually from San Francisco.
And that's one of the issues, too, we're going to talk about. There was a proposal that drivers should be restricted to the areas in which they live. We're going to take a break now. This is your call. We're talking to San Francisco District 3 Supervisor Aaron Peskin. He serves as the chair of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. Also joining us, political columnist and transportation reporter for the SF Examiner, Joe Rodriguez, and Los Angeles Times reporter Liam Dillon. Stay with us. We've got emails standing by and phone callers who really want to talk about this issue. So come on back.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at the show's website. Set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org. And you can also tweet us at Your Call Radio.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us now, I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting the show. You can find out more information at yourcallradio.org. And there you can also listen to past shows and find out what's coming up next. We love it when you have show ideas for us. Drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org or give us a call at 866-798-8255. Coming up tomorrow, it's your media roundtable where we discuss the coverage of the week's news. Of course, this week we'll talk about the shootings at the GOP baseball team practice. We'll look at media coverage of those mass shootings and others in general. So very often these trigger a discussion about gun control, and then the conversation just fizzles out. So how can journalists help take the conversation further? And where did you see some good reporting this week? We hope you'll join the conversation the next Your Call with Mark Hertzgard and you. Today, we're following up on last week's lively discussion about regulating the ride-hailing industry. Last week, we had Uber, Lyft drivers, and cabbies, and passengers share their experiences. This week, it's about the regulatory landscape and how cities are trying to influence the way car services operate in their cities. And we'd love to have you join us. What questions do you have about ride-hailing companies and how they operate in your community? 866-798-8255. We've got a couple of emails, one from Danny, who writes, I understand that ride-sharing needs to be better regulated, but shouldn't we also be doing more to make modes of transit like biking and public transit more attractive? For Supervisor Peskin, what are you doing to extend the Central Subway to North Beach or add protected bike lanes? Supervisor Peskin?
Yeah, absolutely. And we actually have rolled out a very robust bicycle network in San Francisco and continue to do that. I championed that in my first two terms in office and continue to do so. Relative to the Central Subway, which for those who do not know is San Francisco's newest subway, which will connect the T line all the way from Viz Valley to three stops going north from the Caltrain station, currently terminating at Washington and Stockton Streets in the heart of Chinatown. In last year's budget, we actually appropriated over $1 million to begin planning the next stage of that Central Subway to connect ultimately to Fisherman's Wharf, and those planning efforts are underway, and I've been actively engaged in those. But as it relates to Uber and Lyft, what we saw in New York is that as the culture of convenience and the use of these private transportation vehicles impoverished the subway system of New York by a startling 11%. We don't yet have that information, and we're working on producing that data for San Francisco, but it is, I suspect, impoverishing our use of public transit and public transit dollars in San Francisco, and we should be concerned about that.
By impoverished, you mean literally that many fewer people using the subways, et cetera?
That's correct. I mean, if you have 10% in the case of New York using their subway system, that's a lot of fare revenue that you're losing.
Nobody should be surprised by that, though, right? I mean, doesn't that just follow?
Well, people who really support
Joe Rodriguez?
People who really support Uber and Lyft will frequently say, well, Uber, if you take Uber and Lyft, especially Uber Pool and Lyft Line, which are kind of like a group pay, group ride function of these apps, that you're taking cars off the road. But what some transportation kind of wonks would answer to that perhaps is, well, there's a thing called latent demand, and are people who are in Uber and Lyft taking it because they don't want to drive or because they were already bus riders and they would never have taken a cab anyways, but now all of a sudden, because it's so cheap, they'll take Uber and Lyft instead of hopping on a bus or a train, and that might actually do the reverse, adding cars to the road.
So how do you quantify that sort of thing, if you can, Supervisor Peskin?
Well, we are going to quantify that through the issuance of subpoenas that the city attorney, Dennis Herrera, has issued. We're going to quantify that by doing more studies at the County Transportation Authority. And hopefully Uber will learn the lessons that Airbnb learned the hard way, and they will actually work collaboratively with the city so we can do the mature thing, and that is work to solve these problems together. But that, so far, has not been a part of their business model or their behavior. Their behavior, frankly, and it's not news to anybody, has been extremely arrogant. They, you know, this is part of the cult of the bro culture, and they have not been willing to sit down with reasonable regulators like myself and professionals at Muni and our transportation authority to try to figure out a solution going forward that works for everybody.
Well, we're certainly going to get into the so-called bro culture that you mentioned. There's a lot of meat on that bone. But I want to go to an email from Laura and Liam Dillon, L.A. Times reporter. I'm going to direct this one to you. Laura writes, I'm so glad you're talking about this again. Loved last week's show. As a resident of San Francisco for 20 years, having walked and biked most of the city, I am sad to report that I have given up biking in the city because of the reckless driving by rideshare drivers. I've had multiple near misses. Drivers are running red lights. The city feels less safe, and more rideshare drivers is not helping the vision. We've got more pedestrian deaths than ever. I don't know if that's true or not, but are you finding in your research and in your writing, Liam Dillon, that this is a common sentiment?
That people are concerned about the proliferation of ride hailing.
Well, and, I mean, and the safety, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think up and down the state, what I can certainly say is that there has been a tremendous proliferation of ride hailing. I mean, there's no really good data to understand exactly how many more ride hailing drivers are on the road or the growth of this industry. But the research that is out there, and most notably from the Brookings Institution in D.C., has found a real explosion in drivers since 2012, and that number is only speeding up. The most recent research, which included numbers from 2015, shows that the number of ride hailing drivers in L.A., Sacramento, San Diego, and San Jose all doubled in 2015, and the reason why the number of drivers increased just 75% in San Francisco is there was already a huge number of drivers on the road that started from 2012 to 2014, and so there's absolutely been a huge increase and huge boom in the ride-hailing industry, at least in terms of the number of drivers up and down California.
Let's go to a few callers. I'm sure people are really interested in weighing in. Let's go to Mark in San Francisco. Hi, Mark. Okay, Mark writes that he's visually impaired and he finds Lyft and Uber useful, but he has friends in wheelchairs and they have terrible times trying to get any kind of a ride. We did talk about that a bit. And how do you compel companies to have a conscience, to have a corporate policy that accommodates this sort of thing, Supervisor Peskin?
Well, in the case of the taxi industry, where we had local control, we compelled them through passing laws that required a certain percentage of cabs to be equipped to take wheelchairs. We don't have that power as it relates to Uber and Lyft, and that is yet another crying example crying out for regulation.
Let me just add quickly that has been a long-standing issue that people have complained about at the state level as well, and that is one issue that the PUC says it is planning to address by the end of the year. A similar issue that has had a ton of complaints that also the PUC says it will address by the end of the year is the issue issues related to transportation of minors, and so folks under 18 or should they be allowed to go in Uber, Lyft, Uber and Lyft's unsupervised? That's another issue that is going to be addressed.
Another thing crying out for regulation,
Aaron Peskin.
Thank you, is the number of hours these people drive. We actually limit the number of hours that a taxi cab driver can drive for safety reasons. Carolyn Saeed in the Chronicle, Rodriguez's colleague, revealed that some of these people are driving 14 and 15 hours a day. Some of them come in all the way from Fresno. My heart goes out to them. I mean, this is kind of a race to the bottom, as Joe said in the Company Town movie. We should be asking some fundamental questions about what's the matter with our society that people are having to make a living in the 1099 economy. It's a bigger question than issues of street congestion, what have you. But the reality is these people are driving from Fresno for hours to, and they're sleeping in their cars. I mean, it's just not right, and we can't regulate it.
All right, let's go to Jamal in Oakland. Welcome, Jamal.
Yeah, hi. Just to follow up on the last point, you were talking about 15, 16 hours. The driver, they work 15, 16 hours because they are working for... their prices is so cheap to the point it's abusive. It's abusive, and nobody cares as long as he has a right. But my main point is, when it comes to the airport, somebody was talking about regulation. I think one of the supervisors was talking about regulation. How about making them do the same thing like limousine, have a TCP and commercial insurance?
I think you talked about that.
Allowing them to just go by.
So interestingly enough, what the caller raises is the one place where the city does have permit authority, which is if they want to come onto our airport, we actually do issue permits, and that is the only place that we actually collect fees, and we have permit conditions that they have to comply with if they want to do pickups at San Francisco International Airport. So that is the one place that we have regulatory authority.
And it's the one place we see data, which is, you know, kind of goes to this idea of the boom of Uber and Lyft lately. Like in late 2014, when they first started actually picking up and dropping off at the airport, the airport was able to measure that there was tens of thousands of Ubers and Lyfts coming, more so for Uber than Lyft, of course. But at this point now in early 2017, those numbers have blossomed and boomed. There are 400,000 Ubers a month picking up and drop – 4,000 pickups and drop-offs a month of Uber vehicles at the airport, and 100,000 pickups and drop-offs performed by Lyft vehicles a month at the airport. And that's from their own counting. Mm-hmm. It's a stunning, stunning boom.
But I do want to say, in response to the previous caller who was talking about the low wages, I think we also need to be aware of what I think is a rather sinister move on Uber and Lyft's part, which is that their ultimate goal is to phase all of these low-wage jobs out and replace everything with self-driving autonomous vehicles. Mm. So, I mean, this is really a play for wiping out that entire segment of the workforce that historically has been in ground transportation.
The Chronicle actually profiled one driver named Barber, 35 years old, drives for Lyft and Uber. She comes to the city most weeks, according to the article, to put in 3 or 4 hour long days behind the wheel, spending the night at friends' houses in Half Moon Bay. She works 12 to 16 hours a day. She can pull in up to $1,700 after Lyft and Uber take their cuts, but before deducting for gas and other expenses. But that's 70% more than what her husband pays, who's not working, who's a stay-at-home. He makes driving for services back in Fresno. It just pales in comparison when he does drive in the Fresno area. So there seem to be two issues here: the incentive structure to drive in San Francisco compared to other places, and the fact that the drivers are independent contractors. So, Aaron Peskin, maybe I can let's start with Liam Dillon, because you do cover different cities and how they're handling it. So how do the companies incentivize the drivers to saturate areas like San Francisco? And how do you change the incentive structure?
Well, just so a couple things. One, I think the incentives are where the demand is, right? Mm-hmm. So there's more people who want to ride in Uber and Lyft ride in San Francisco than in Fresno. I mean, that's just the basic supply and demand sort of issue. The supply will go to where the demand is. Second, to some of your point about independent contractors, there's been a longstanding push from one of the lawmakers here from San Diego region who is trying to figure out a way for Uber and Lyft drivers and all independent contractor employees in some way to organize or unionize or collectively bargain with the companies for various, you know, work rules, pay rules, things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's proven to be tremendously complicated, not just on her part, but also in some of the unions that are working in that area. And that's because you have, you have a tremendous diversity in the people who are doing this, folks who are only doing this 2 or 3 hours a week or folks who are doing it full-time. And those folks who are doing it full-time have very different needs and wants than those who are doing it a few hours a week. And if you do, have more of an employee relationship rather than an independent contractor relationship, that means that the companies could, you know, delineate the time of day you have to work and don't have to work. And so a lot of the folks who do this do enjoy the freedom of being able to say, I'm going to turn the app on for an hour and drive, and then no one's going to bother me the rest of the week. And so there are sort of strings attached to kind of having some of these work rules that may mandate or could mandate higher pay that may also come with mandated hours. And so it's a very complicated issue and something that the legislature has not quite been able to figure out how to do yet.
And Rodriguez?
Mm-hmm. There's this great report in the New York Times that came out within the last month or month or two that was talking about all the different incentive structures that Uber and Lyft use. And the kind of the main thesis of this really excellent long piece was basically that, you know, Uber and Lyft can't direct its drivers like employees because legally they can't. But they have so many technological bells and whistles, from offering money incentives for driving at certain times to alerting them or alerting drivers of particular large events where they can drum out service, to kind of just offering discounted portions of rates that they take. There are many little subtle ways that they can kind of game drivers to incentivize them to drive at certain times and places, maybe stay on the road a little longer than they thought they would. And all these little things really add up to getting drivers out when they may not have decided to drive on their own, which I think is fascinating. And one of the reasons they do that is because the more cars they have circling, the sooner you get that vehicle. So if you're a person with your app and you want to get in your Uber in 2 minutes, it behooves Uber to have 10 different cars circling the blocks near you so that when you order it, it comes right away. But who ends up losing in that scheme? Unfortunately, many articles have found, much research has found, is the drivers, who then have too many drivers out there for any one of them to really earn a living.
Okay, let's go to an email from Joelle. She says, I would like to see regulation that requires rideshare drivers to be residents of the county they serve. Seems like a pretty simple issue. A driver would be registered under their official residence address, and they must begin each ride from within that county, with exceptions for return trips. That would prevent the crazy commutes that clog our bridges and highways and the long commutes that cause many drivers to drive dangerously for many hours, well beyond what is safe. Aaron Peskin?
I agree. If I could pass that legislation and overcome the state preemption that the state PUC has brought to this county and every one of the 58 counties in the state, I would consider legislation like that.
Okay, let's go to Polly. I'm sorry, did you want to weigh in? Liam, sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing to think about that would be a concern with a policy like that is why we should restrict some economic opportunity from folks who may just for whatever reason live in Fresno and be able and couldn't afford, say, to live in San Francisco but would have the opportunity to work there. And so potentially restricting San Francisco Uber drivers, people who live there, could block some folks who want to work there. And it would be, you know, certainly something to think about to restrict some of the economic opportunity that they would have to be able to do that.
So I think there are policy rationales, mm-hmm. actually not necessarily relative to where one resides, but if I could cap the total number of TNCs in San Francisco to a reasonable number that serves the unmet need, I would put that cap in place. I think right now, as we've heard from Liam and from Joe, and as we're all experiencing on the streets, there are there's a factor of cars that don't need to be there in order to serve the need. And we were able to cap the number of taxi cabs in San Francisco. Perhaps we should have allowed that number to grow larger, but we should have that same regulatory ability as it relates to TNCs.
All right. Let's go to a caller, Polly in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hi. I was raised in cities. I'm a lifelong public transportation fan. I could easily afford taxis. My point is that I think people are snobs. God forbid they should sit on public conveyance next to somebody who might be muttering to herself. People complain all the time about public transportation, but if people used it and got out of their cars in the city, I own a car, but I never use it in the city, then there would be enough revenue to buy more buses, to have better buses, to improve the schedules, the whole thing. I think the use of ride-hailing services is further ghettoizing public transportation. And to me, that's the biggest problem, is that people, they need an instant... The gentleman was just talking about people who want a car in 2 minutes. It's part of the whole culture of instant gratification and the sense of entitlement. And I really feel that my main point is, I think these ride-hailing things, aside from a great many other things I dislike about them as a pedestrian, I'm constantly being threatened, is that it just is ghettoizing the public transportation system. And
I'm not sure exactly what that means, but maybe Joe Rodriguez, you have a feel for what she's referring to.
Yeah, I mean, I hear this concern a lot from readers and even from transportation policymakers, the idea that people with more wealth are moving to places where they can spend their money for transportation to have it more comfortable, like Uber or Lyft, and to a certain degree, a kind of tech-enabled, app-based bus service called Chariot, which is a small mini bus that seats like, you know, 9 people or so that you can summon with an app. And then it leaves less tax dollars. People are less likely to invest their tax dollars or vote to invest their tax dollars in public transportation. And that's a real concern that people are having in the transportation world, that, you know, the less people take Muni, for instance, or BART because they think that they can take an Uber or Lyft, why are they going to vote for a bond to fund Muni or BART come next time that we want to spend, the cities or the Bay Area wants $500 million to revitalize the system? If you take Uber or Lyft, what want do you have to spend that money? In addition, Uber and Lyft are slowly kind of creeping into the public transportation kind of their realm. Lyft has kind of a bus-like line where the Lyft cars only go on a certain fixed route, and then you go to what are essentially kind of bus stops, quote unquote. But they're actually just kind of Lyft stops that are regular, and then you say, oh, I'm going to be there, and then you can be picked up. It's still in very early stages, and Lyft and Uber are both kind of playing at it, but it is kind of creeping into the territory that buses and trains have right now.
And to add insult to
Aaron
injury.
Aaron Peskin.
Thank you, Renee. Mm-hmm. To add insult to injury, they're not mitigating with any financial contribution their impacts to city streets. I'm talking about paving our streets, which we all know are in horrendous condition. This is a commercial activity, and we have not yet been able to get the dollars that Uber and Lyft are making to reinvest in street resurfacing.
All right, let's go to another call. Hello. Thanks for hanging in there. Hi, are you there?
Yes, hi.
You're a taxi driver, yes?
Yes. Hi, I would like to ask them what they can do about like this permit that they still ask for $250,000, and now we cannot compete with Uber and Lyft because it's unfair. And we are going bankrupt. So what they can do to help us, where most of us are going bankrupt?
Aaron Peskin, the medallion question.
Yes, the medallion question. Mm-hmm. And for those people who do not know, to drive a taxi cab in San Francisco requires the issuance by the SFMTA of a medallion, and those medallions have historically been sold for $250,000 and are now not worth $250,000. And earlier this year, I actually encouraged the MTA to waive the annual fees that Drivers have to pay the city in order to balance the playing field. But my heart goes out to medallion holders in San Francisco.
There has been a major paradigm shift, and we may never be able to put the genie back in the bottle. But I think, you know, given the news lately, we would be remiss not to talk about the culture in the companies, particularly Uber. It's been in the news a lot. CEO Travis Kalanick is now on leave for at least 3 months, as far as we know, after reports of sexual harassment. The question, actually, and I'm going to let the three of you respond to that and just end in the way that you would like to based on this issue. How will the culture of these companies, these new startups, how will it be treated going forward by passengers, by drivers? Does it filter down? Aaron, I'll let you have your last words on that.
This is the Wild West. It's like the days of the old railway barons in the 1800s. At some point, hopefully in the not too distant future, we will rationalize this and we'll get it under control. The behavior has been abysmal, whether it's evading law enforcement authorities with their gray ball technology, which is now being investigated by our district attorney, whether it's discriminatory practices relative to the disability community, minority communities. It's time for these people to grow up and start behaving like mature corporate citizens.
All right. Liam Dillon, LA Times, your last thoughts on the culture question?
I think it's been pretty interesting if you look at this in the context of the shift in public opinion as well. I think when these companies first started, and I'm just speaking particularly of Uber, I mean, there was a lot of support, public support for this is something new, it's something fun, it's something different, it's something we all like go Travis, beat up some taxis, you know, that's great, right? And I think that was sort of the prevailing public wisdom at the beginning. Now, I think given sort of the rightful public indignation at some of the things that have been sort of uncovered with respect to Uber, I think there's no longer the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I think there's a lot of stories that would come out that would be negative to the company or look negative as it relates to the company that people would believe automatically, right? Because the company has done so many things that just sort of harm the public trust or public goodwill that they had built at the beginning. And so I think that's one reason why I think it's going to potentially take a long time for the company to kind of crawl out of the hole that it's in now.
All right. San Francisco Examiner's Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, your last thoughts.
Well, I just think, again, it's important to point out that a lot of these changes that are happening on the policy level locally are happening just in the last month and really just at the indignation of the public. So if you are outraged, whether you're a driver who needs protections or a citizen who wants clear streets, just make your voice heard.
All right. We have so many calls and emails. This is one of those subjects, and we're sorry we couldn't get to everyone. We've been talking today with San Francisco District 3 Supervisor Aaron Peskin. Also joining us, political columnist and transportation reporter for the SF Examiner, Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez. And on the phone with us, Los Angeles Times reporter Liam Dillon. Thank you so much for being here and answering a lot of our questions about where we go from here in terms of regulation of these industries. It's been interesting. Your Call is produced at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Phil Hartman is chief engineer. Kevin Vance is the studio engineer. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And tomorrow, don't forget to tune in for our media roundtable. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This has been Your Call.